Ohio State sports. It's all encompassing. You can't get away from it. You can't run from it. You can't hide from it. That's why we have the Dubcast, to keep you informed. And we've got a few things that we wanted to start off with, and one that I think maybe people pay a little bit too much attention to, give a little too much light and you know, try to wring some stories out of, and then another one that's much more funny and entertaining. So we're going to start with the slightly lame one first, and then we'll get into the real meat and potatoes of it with basketball here in a second. But we do need to talk about the draft and the combine and everything leading up to it. I will say this is a pretty, at least as far as Ohio State was concerned, I don't want to say drama-free draft or combine. There was a little bit of drama, but it was pretty much entirely manufactured by the media in Indy, 9/11 warriors. but we'll talk about that in a second. I do just want to say in general, like, I want to ask you, we had a bunch of guys for Ohio State representing at the combine. You got guys like Mayan Williams and Marvin Harrison Jr., obviously, who really didn't participate in any drills, just kind of showed up and got measured and dipped, and which is probably,
well, for very different reasons. I mean, Mayan Williams is still recovering from a knee injury.
Correct. Yes. And Marvin Harrison Jr. probably doesn't need to be there at all. But, you know, Cade Stover, Mike Jones, or Matt Jones, Mike Hall, Steel Chambers, Tommy Eichenberg, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think any of these guys, like, you know, based off the few days that we, you know, we get in Indianapolis or wherever, was it Indianapolis this year? I think it was in Indianapolis.
It's in Indianapolis, right? Every year.
Okay. For some reason, I thought they were going to move it around at some point. I knew it was in Indianapolis this year, but for some reason I thought like yearly they were going to try to change that. But regardless,
Championship.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well then you got to have it in the big field house and all that. Then.
Lucas Oil's a cathedral for football. So. It really is. It's one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen a football game at.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think any of the dudes who showed up for Ohio State for the NFL Combine, do you think they impacted their draft stock in any significant way, or is this kind of much ado about nothing? In other words, do you think that NFL executives glean a whole hell of a lot from Cade Stover getting mad about questions about his blocking
ability? I mean, I didn't expect Stover to run a 4.65 40, so I think that he, you know,
that probably helps
for
a little bit.
For the Al Davises of the world that are like blown away by, you know, the 40 yard dash to where they would do something like take Darius Hayward base 7th overall in the draft based on their 40 time. I'm sure that, you know, Xavier Worthy certainly helped himself out, and you know, if, you know, you run impressively, it's never a criticism against your style. I think Josh Proctor ran like a 4.55 or something. I remember Olave really blowing away a lot of people when he ran his 40 time when he was in the combine a few years ago. So that's really always what kind of jumps out, unless you're like putting on a record breaking performance or something. I mean, it's hard to make a big storyline with any of the other drills. You know, the lone
So Chambers and Eichenberg blowing everybody out of the water in the 20-yard shuttle is not going to move
right. The lone exception is when like the guys that weigh like 350 pounds jump like 30 inches in the air or something. So that's, you know,
which is really, in my opinion, the only part of the combine that should actually be televised. That, I mean, the 40-yard dash is cool, but honestly, I just want to see big dudes like get up. Like, that's it. I just want to see that. I don't care about anything else. I just want to see offensive linemen performing athletic drills, and that's it. Everything else is lost as entertainment.
I don't
value.
Think there's been a like all around entertaining combine performance since DK Metcalf. So if that's what the standard is, that's like, you know, it's going to be hard to live up to that for anybody, let alone Ohio State players. I would say Stover probably helped his stock a little bit. That's me kind of playfully reacting to the criticism that you alluded to that he received for the blocking, and then him kind of addressing that head on and being like, well, he's like, you know, I think it's kind of overblown and PFF doesn't know what they're talking about. But then when he went further on it and elaborated on like what's on tape, he also said something along the lines of it is what it is. So kind of a half admission that, there's at least work to be done there, but you know, not shying away from the issue, I guess, is good, even if it may come off as arrogant a little bit.
Yeah, but it's not like, I think the criticism of Cade Stover when it came to blocking isn't that he's unable to do that. It's just that he's so unbelievably inconsistent with it and missing blocks and forgetting where he's supposed to be in terms of assignments. It's not like he's a weak guy or can't, you know, wouldn't be able to hold up against, you know, NFL rushers or things like that. It's just that he's bad at it. And that's something that needs to improve on. And that's a valid question to ask about that.
I think it too, the frustration with him having the rep as this, like, you know, hardworking farmhand when he goes home from school in the summer. And it's like somebody
straight out of Grapes of Wrath, and then he, you know,
somebody with that blue collar work ethic can't translate it to the, you know, the part of the most meat and potatoes part of playing the tight end position and really football generally. It's like, so there's some, I guess, some frustration there, but that's also baked in with the fact that, I mean, you know, Ohio State has had pretty good overall tight ends in recent years that have been somewhat underutilized in the offense. And then Stover comes in, and I think he set the receiving record for a tight end like this past season or whatever.
I think he fell short of it towards the end, but he was close throughout the season. And that's the other thing. I mean, that's going to get him looks in the NFL. You know, we kind of talked about it. He ran a great 40. I think he'll be fine. I don't think he's sweating it. I also don't think Marvin Harrison Jr. is sweating it. Somebody, you know, I don't even remember where this originated. People were talking about him skipping out on a media obligation and making it seem like he had just left town or something in the middle of the night, right? Like of the convoy, just I'm skipping Indy. I'm out of here. I hate this.
It was the same people that leaked CJ Stroud's Wonderlic score or whatever it is.
Yeah, right. And so it annoyed me because first of all, he came out and he retweeted a guy who basically said like, hey, he showed up, he did the measurements early and told everybody he was leaving. And then the NFL acted like they didn't know where the dude was, which is stupid. And then of course everybody ran with it. To me, this is completely much ado about nothing. I'm surprised it even showed up to Indy at all.
This guy that's been grandfathered into the NFL is showing terrible work ethic when it comes to the media part.
Yeah, that's nepotism for you. I can't believe
this poor professionalism.
That's right. Marvin Harrison Jr., who's done nothing but show us just his contempt, his utter contempt for the professionalism that's required to be an NFL player.
This is like the only good example of nepotism that has ever existed in the NFL.
Right. That's right. So, that's that whole situation, that controversy is incredibly stupid. And I'm surprised he was even there.
It's part of the national media's effort to sabotage the lead draft prospect out of Ohio State every year. They did it with Justin Fields. They did it with CJ Stroud, and Marvin Harrison Jr. is just the latest to bear this burden.
Yeah. You know what? So out of the combine, the thing that I think I was most interested in overall was not actually a performance or a story around any of the graduating Ohio State players. I was more interested in what former Alabama teammates were saying about Caleb Downs, transfer safety from Alabama, who was basically the best freshman in the country. And they had nothing but glowing praise. One guy was saying he was going to be a top five NFL pick. That was actually the most excited I got throughout this entire process because, you know, sometimes you don't really know what you're getting. And yeah, you watch this guy, but you're not paying attention to him when he's not on your team. And that just got me super, super hyped for the coming season. Again, this is, you know, early March, so whatever that means. But I loved hearing that. I thought that was awesome that these guys, and not only that, but he had the respect of these dudes who are going into the NFL potentially as a freshman, right? And they said that he was, you know, setting the tone in the weight room and taking it super seriously. Like, that's the kind of guy you want on your team. So I'm really excited about that. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, it didn't necessarily surprise me just because the sentiment was that he was kind of up next for Bama. And then when the Saban departure happened, that kind of, you know, pulled the rug out from underneath that program. And it does, I think, reflect very well on him that his peers that are now, you know, preparing to embark to the NFL are still speaking very highly of him in spite of the fact that he spurned maybe not the downfall of their dynasty per se, but I'm sure that in those players' eyes, they have the option to look at it as a betrayal if they wanted to. And the fact that they aren't doing that you, and on some level, you kind of expect them to turn the other cheek as they're, you know, preparing to move on to the NFL and not really letting petty, I guess, football politics bother them in that sense. But I wouldn't necessarily expect them to. I mean, think about it, too. If you're going to the combine and you want to show that you're, you know, a good asset for a professional team, would it? Is that necessarily the place for you to slander a former teammate of yours? Right. It's like, oh, that guy stinks because he doesn't play for my alma mater anymore. It's like, oh, OK.
That's right. I hate everybody who is an Alabama alumnus.
Write that down.
That's right.
So every other
football player makes me rash.
So it didn't necessarily make me any more excited for Caleb Downs. I already knew that Ohio State was. I mean, look, the guy had what, over 100 tackles as a freshman. That's extremely impressive. So
that's pretty good.
It doesn't surprise me that Ohio State is getting like a bona fide stud just based on what all the Alabama people were saying even before his NFL-bound teammates decided to heap even more praise on him. But it's definitely a good thing to hear, and I'll be excited to see him next year.
Agree. All right. Well, football is you know, we've got it coming up. You know, the spring practices and everything like that, and of course that leads into the spring games. So there's all kinds of things that we're going to be talking about and looking at as some of these transfers get on campus, as they start doing some interesting things during practice, and we can report on that. But the combine's stupid, so let's stop talking about that and instead start talking about something that isn't stupid, which is Jake Diebler, head coach of Ohio State, has won as many Big Ten conference games in his first handful of games as head coach as Chris Holtmann won the entirety of the season prior to his firing, and the entirety of the season that Michigan has won, Juwan Howard has won down there. So I don't know, man. Ohio State comes out. I'm not surprised they beat Michigan. Michigan is a complete garbage fire of a team. I mean, they are by far the worst team in the Big Ten this season. But there was a point in the second half where the Buckeyes, I think, were only up by about six or seven, something like that.
That game was uncomfortably close for like way too long, especially in the first half.
Maybe like about 5 minutes. It was around, it hovered around that 5 to 7.
It was longer
lead
than that.
Yeah. Well, it felt like an eternity. And I was like, okay, well, this is where they blow it. This is where, you know, we go back to the mean and we got to bust out all the old narratives and whatnot. And instead, they just started stealing everything. They had 14 steals in the game, and it felt like all of them came within this like 2 or 3 minute sequence. About like halfway through the second half, and they just hit shot after shot after shot. They shot over 70% in the second half alone against Michigan. On senior night, closing it out, it was domination after that little stretch there. They outscored Michigan 52-34 in the second half. They won by 23, and at one point they were up by almost 30. And that's pretty sick. And that's coming on the heels of a victory against Nebraska, which I didn't think they were going to hit, you know, get that. And you still have the opportunity, you know, to finish this season here. They're going, what, they got Rutgers next, right?
That's their last game is at Rutgers next weekend.
So there you go. So you've got one more game against Rutgers. You can get to 19 wins in the season. I'm telling you something, George. This is not – I know we talked about the possibility of this, but now I think you have to start taking it very seriously that this is still a potential bubble team for the NCAA tournament.
The Dubcast has been talking about it for weeks.
People are saying, and I don't think I expected us to have to seriously consider that, honestly. I mean, it was this pie-in-the-sky thing, and now it feels like they are just destroying teams – in the second half in a way that they just had no ability to under Chris Holtmann. So I don't know what kind of like magic juice, you know, that Jake Diebler has been giving those guys, like, in, you know, Space Jam, like, is it like, you know, Mike's magic drink or whatever? Like, I don't know what he's giving them after halftime, but they're killing it, and they're doing it in ways that they had not been able to do until the past.
Well, maybe he is, because if you'll remember, Mike's secret sauce was just water. It wasn't. He just wrote it in Sharpie, and it was
within you all the time. Right,
it was a total placebo, and it has been within them all along. But the guy they had before Diebler was holding them back and lost the respect of the team, and now they have it back. To that point of comparing what this team would have done in the second half, or like a month ago, versus what they did in the second half against Michigan today. We're recording this on Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
With when they took the lead after, you know, a series of steals that led to transition points, they went up by 16 with about 6.5 minutes to go. And as soon as they scored their the point that put them up 16, Diebler called timeout.
Yeah.
Which is like, you know, kind of
weird. You wouldn't expect that. Right.
He called timeout going up 60. Even the commentary team was kind of stunned, like, oh, this is an Ohio State timeout. That's interesting, because he wanted to hammer home, okay, guys, what we want to do here is not blow this lead. Because in addition to, you know, this being kind of our MO in a ton of other games, even from a month ago, you know, the perfect example being the Indiana game when they were up 18 points. This is senior day, and we want to have enough time to get, you know, the end of the bench in, and we can only do that if we're comfortably ahead by 30 or 25. And that's exactly what they did. They did not let up in their hustle or their defense, and they very, very comfortably put the game away and really squeezed the last bit of life and resolve out of Michigan down the stretch. That kind of instinct was not on this team a month ago.
No, and they emptied the bench. So they got every single person who dressed got to be on the court, which is freaking awesome. I love seeing that on senior day. And you're right. Like, this is not – that's not how this team would have tried to close it out. And I think a part of it is I think Diebler is letting them just play at a certain point and saying, look, just go for it. Go for the steal. Go for the – because, first of all, I don't – again – it's hard to draw conclusions from limited data, but what I will say is that I don't think you see a situation where Zed Key is getting 5 steals in a game. You know what I mean? He had another 2.
He
in
did
this
against
game.
Purdue.
Yeah, but that's my point. Like, right? But that's what I'm saying.
He's not gonna keep doing that, right?
I don't think so, but I think he's given the leeway to do that, and I think maybe one of the things that was going on with this team under Holtmann is that they just had too much that were getting thrown at them by the coach. I think the coach was saying, you got to do this and this and this and this and this. Diebler's letting these dudes play. And when you see guys who are like, you know, the way you shut down a team in the second half is by denying them scoring opportunities. You steal the basketball 14 times in a game, right? Dale Bonner had 3 steals. Battle had 2. Zed had 2. Like, you go after dudes. And that's what they were doing. They were aggressive in a way that they hadn't been in a lot of ways under Chris Holtmann. I think that's a big part of it. I think by not having these guys overthink situations, especially when they're up, then that gives them the leeway to start, you know, being creative, taking shots, that kind of stuff, where they tighten up. If there's too much on their plate, if they're saying, you have to go here, you have to do this assignment, blah, blah, blah. And when you're up, I think that causes teams to tighten up, and that does not seem to be what's happening under Jake Diebler. So I think that is a huge difference, and, you know, that may get them in the NCAA tournament. So, you know, I still think there's work to be done if they want that. Bracketology, I don't think, is still in their favor yet, but it's getting there. So I don't know.
Here's the real question, Johnny. It was on the coveted famous 11 Warriors polls last week. It was a dead even split on, and this was in the immediate aftermath of Dale Bonner's game winner against Michigan State. It was a dead even split on whether or not Ohio State fans want to see Jake Diebler coach next season. Where do you sit? Is the jury still
right
out? Or if you had to, let's say the jury isn't out and you have to make a decision right now, would you bring him back?
I have to make a decision right now?
Yes. Would you bring him back? To that point, by the way, Bjork was in attendance for his first Ohio State game today with Gene Smith. So he's, you know, he's thinking about it.
No. And I don't think that was like some kind of like, oh, we're just taking in a game. I mean, I think that actually means something. I think that's notable. No, I wouldn't. I don't think I would bring him back. I think I'd roll with, you know, an established name, somebody that I know. If you know, if I have the perspective of Ohio State going on a crazy run and, you know, getting to the Big Ten tournament finals and then sneaking into the tournament and all that stuff, and maybe they pull a game or two, I'm like, all right, well, let's roll with this dude. But as of right now, if like a guy like Sean Miller, right, is available and is interested, yeah, and you can sign him, then I think you still have to do right. that. And I know that's, you know, people would be disappointed in that and go, oh, well, like, but look what Diebler's done. Yeah. But you also got to like think long term and, you know, you don't want to get yourself in a situation where you give a guy like a 3-year contract or a 4-year contract and throw a ton of money at him. And then next year they, you know, they win 5 games.
Yeah, and the thing is, Sean Miller is a bit older, I think, as a candidate than a lot of people realize. So there's certainly leeway with how young Jake Diebler is, where you let him go somewhere else and cut his teeth even further and really prove himself. Sure. And then who's to say not down the line when it's Sean Miller's time to leave, whether it's on good or bad terms, that Diebler is then a guy that, you think he'd say no to coming back after the run that he's had? And I'm sure even if he has to leave, he would understand the circumstances just because he's the interim coach right now and they're about to change athletic directors.
Yeah. So. And given his, you know, obviously his family as a whole, his brother, you know, their connection to Ohio State and how long he's been here. Like,
and he's already made history as a coach here.
That's right.
With the Purdue win.
Yeah. Right. Because what was that? What was that like?
First coach to beat an AP top 5 team in their head coaching debut since the 96-97 season.
Perfect.
That's a big deal. That's
unbelievable. Yeah, that is a big deal. I mean, that's a lot of pressure for a guy, and he's stepped up, and I think he's definitely, you know, equal to the task. I just don't know that he's equal to the task of running a program like Ohio State.
At this stage, that's
a different thing. Right, and that's the thing. Like, it's different. There's a difference between being capable of being a game day coach and somebody who can do the day-to-day stuff and, you know, do what needs to be done on the court, and someone who can organize recruiting and make sure that personnel works out and all this other stuff. Like, that's a whole other element of it that you need to have in your bag. And I just don't know that about Jake Diebler. I don't know if he has that. I don't know if he has that experience. But again, you know, like, they go on a run here, they make the tournament, then you never know. Now, for what it's worth, bracketology, first of all, does not even have them on the first four out. And secondly, is only projecting that 6 Big Ten teams are going to be selected, which doesn't surprise me. The Big Ten is definitely down this season. It's not a strong conference top to bottom. However, there are a lot of teams that are really, really like packed in the middle of the Big Ten. You've got a bunch of like 18-10, 18-11, 17-12 type teams. If Ohio State's able to distinguish itself from those teams and, like I said, win a bunch of games in the conference tournament, not a bunch, but at least a couple, I think you will find yourself as one of those, you know, last two or three teams selected.
Well,
but you gotta make some noise in the tournament.
To twist the knife on the Wolverine audience today, I thought it was pretty funny that the CBS commentary team compared the resurrection of this Ohio State team and what they were seeing to the Michigan team that went on a run in 2017 that was originally an 8th seed in the Big Ten tournament at the end of the season. So it was funny to hear that parallel. I don't think that there's a lot of Ohio State fans that would want to make that comparison, just for the unfortunate fact that you would have to recognize Michigan in a positive light. But to hear national media that regularly observe college basketball make that comparison, granted, on the outside looking in of the Big Ten tournament still to come, and we still need to see how the team does in that setting. And they also made the point that despite whatever team Ohio State would have to play in that circumstance that would result in their 20th win in the first round, they would still have to beat the likes of either Purdue or Illinois probably in their second game if they actually wanted to make any serious advancement.
Right.
And that's probably the game that they would need to win in order to ensure that they're going to make the tournament, as opposed to just leaning on the existing body of work and having 20 wins at that point. So there's still work to be done, but the aura of this team is certainly in a more positive place, not just within Ohio State, but also from the outside looking in from a national perspective than I think it's been in, you know, certainly since prior to the loss to Oral Roberts in the NCAA tournament a handful of years ago.
Oh, 100%.
So it's, things definitely are looking up, and I hopefully we don't have to see this team season end anytime soon.
Yeah, I agree. And by the way, let's talk about Michigan. You brought it up. Let's talk about Michigan a little bit.
Oh, please.
As I said, the worst team in the Big Ten by a wide margin. Look, there's a lot of mediocre teams in the Big Ten. I mean, a lot of mediocre teams in the Big Ten. There is only one truly terrible team, and that is the Michigan Wolverines. And first of all, I mean, I know people are talking about, like, when's Juwan going to get fired? When's Howard going to get fired? Well, he should have been fired after he assaulted another coach.
Yeah.
But if that wasn't going to do it, I almost feel like there's this sunk cost fallacy with Ward Manuel over there at the, you know, the AD position at Michigan, where they're going to give him another year just to say, whatever, dude, like, prove it. Even though, because it's almost like they have to prove that there was a reason why they didn't fire him immediately after that incident, right? And then, of course, you've got all the stuff with the strength and conditioning coach and everything else that's been going on in this terrible season. I almost feel like they have to justify them not firing him and that immediate aftermath of him embarrassing himself and the team on national stage by saying there's still a potential that this guy might be good.
Well, it comes down to Ward Manuel.
All evidence to the contrary.
It comes down to Ward Manuel, because you just alluded to the strength and conditioning component. I want to come back to that in a second. But the other side of is, you know, one of the things we talked about in the immediate aftermath of Holtman getting fired was how we were grateful that Gene Smith, in his swan song as athletic director, was willing to put aside his own ego in the component of that firing, particularly in season, that is indirectly an admission of guilt and error.
Right.
And he was willing to overlook that as he's preparing to depart and is obviously thinking about the legacy he's leaving at Ohio State. Ward Manuel is not willing to do that. And I think that there's two sides of it. One that I think is a little bit less thought of is that it looks very, very bad on his resume if, not just in the same year, but within the same handful of months, Jim Harbaugh and Juwan Howard are both out of the athletic program at Michigan. Even if, you know, Harbaugh is leaving on probably the best terms he could ask for, the guy is still spurning coming back. And we've talked about, too, how that's even an unusual circumstance of a guy, you know, wins at the highest level that you can there and then is just immediately gone within weeks. I mean, that definitely doesn't, however you want to frame it in terms of the coach's own aspirations or whatever, that still doesn't reflect good on your program that he then not only leaves, but then poaches most of the other coaching talent from there while that, you know, kind of continuing the exodus. So it looks bad for you as an athletic director if your two biggest figureheads from a coaching perspective both leave the university within the same time. And then that's not even getting into the fact that they had to, you know, kick their hockey coach to the curb a few years ago, even under, you know, even worse circumstances. But the bigger thing in terms of reflecting that, like, I thought it was funny too when people even on 11 Warriors staff were suggesting, like, this has got to be it for Juwan Howard, right? They got to can him after back-to-back 25-point losses. It's like
they don't want to admit that they made a mistake.
Ward Manuel just fired the strength and conditioning coach two days ago. The guy that opened, like, the story coming out of that from earlier this season was, and I'm paraphrasing, but Juwan Howard's son was, like, going off on one of the trainers on staff, and Sanderson stepped in and said, dude, you're a student athlete. This guy is a professional. You need to check yourself. And the very notion that Sanderson would stand up to the coach's son prompted Juwan Howard to almost come to blows with the guy that he's supposed to be working with.
Right.
And instead of, you know, really effectively penalizing Juwan Howard for that, which I think maybe he got suspended a few games. I don't even remember how they ended up settling that situation. I do remember a lot of the Michigan media around that time were trying to squash that as a non-story, as if it was getting blown up. And then we ended up hearing like the full side of it from I think they suspended Sanderson, actually. I don't even think they ended up suspending Howard for anything that he did in that. And then they fire that guy in the middle of their free fall instead of actually going after the coach. So it's the fact that Ward Manuel had already kind of, you know, they're not going to fire both of those guys in the same week. And yeah, Howard is at least, I think, at this point going to make it to the end of the year. To your point, I do think that he is probably on his last season if he doesn't turn it around next season. They are going to give him one more year. But, yeah, the guy should have been gone after what happened against the Wisconsin head coach 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's just too much of an admission of guilt for Ward Manuel to do that at this time. But really, you know, even at any time in their relationship, I think even before things have gone completely sour. So it's, you know, I would like to see more of Juwan Howard at Michigan as much as they want.
Yeah, I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't complain if they gave him another year. But what baffles me is that he gave them an out, right? Like, and it's not like Michigan was performing so well that they had to overlook it. It wasn't a situation where, okay, well, you know, we've gotten to these Sweet 16, the Elite Eight so often, and we're just going to keep doing that over and over. Like, there was a definite decline in Michigan basketball that was coming pretty obvious to everybody paying attention.
The Fab Five gives you an out. Too much to them,
I guess. But he gave them an out, and they refused to take it, and now they are kind of reaping the whirlwind here. And that's, I'm not sad about it. I think it's very funny. But it's really just kind of them choking on their own hubris here a little bit. And they are truly bad. I mean, I hope everybody got to watch the basketball game today, because they were, if you want to see just utter ineptitude coming out of the Michigan Wolverines, that was it. That's about as bad as it gets for college basketball.
Well, worried about Ohio State a month ago relative to not only not being able to retain a lead, but kind of quitting when things are starting to look like they're going to get out of hand. I mean, that's exactly what happened today.
They completely gave up. That's what was so baffling to me. And that's part of why you saw so many steals towards the end, because they just didn't care. They were trying to protect the ball. It was just whatever, you know, like, oh, they took it. That sucks. They were slow to get back. I mean, it's just, there was a lot going on. And it's really funny to me that we didn't even talk about this, but the entire tone of the game was set from the jump, with Zed Key posterizing a dude from the very first
the highlight
basket
of the season.
Oh, my God.
The most unheralded dunk of the year in college basketball.
And it's from Zed Key, who, like, I don't know. That's just such an affirmation of everything that Zed Key is about.
Imagine
and
showing someone that
so
highlight
funny.
3 years ago.
Oh, my God.
If you told them Zed Key did that, they wouldn't believe you that was Zed Key.
No. Yeah, that he was even capable of that. Yeah, it was hilarious. It was absolutely hilarious. It set the tone for the entire game. And it was just, you know, it was a feel-good story of the weekend. Let me put it that way. It was nice.
The one thing that worries me is, like, is there a realistic chance that Beilein would come back if the coaching job became open again?
For Michigan?
He's a senior director of, like, player personnel.
Yeah, he's
for
still
the
there.
Well, no. He's with the he's back in the state of Michigan, like, but he's working a front office job for the Pistons now.
Right. Yeah, I knew that. So he's back in the area. I mean, he's 71.
Okay, that's pretty old. He was the head coach of the Cavs like a handful, 3 or 4 years ago. Like, is there maybe he's one of those guys that saw the writing on the wall relative to NIL and wanted to get out early for that reason? But I worry about, you know, we're laughing and yucking it up at how inept they are at this moment, but they have a candidate right there if the guy is interested, sure, that he could come right back in and just start really screwing things up again for the rest of the Big Ten.
Here's what I think. I think John Beilein has coached almost 1,200 games in college.
Yeah.
And I think he's done. I think he's 71 years old.
I hope so.
Yeah, I think he's probably done with that part of his life. And that's, yeah, I hope so too, because he's an excellent, I mean, he was an excellent college coach. But yeah, I think he's probably done. But I don't, you know, if they keep trying, you know, to ride the Howard train as far as it'll take him, you know, he may not.
I just wonder, like, if he knew that the NBA experiment was going to blow up for him as fast as it did, would he have even left the job at Michigan?
I don't think so. I don't think so at all.
And that's what scares me, is that he could just pick that back up again if he really wants to.
I think it's, you've got a different AD. You had, at least in terms of, like, you know, the guy who hired him, right? You've moved on to a different role in a different league. You know, he's still in the NBA. I don't see it.
And he's got a much easier paycheck now, but he'd presumably be making more money as head coach of Michigan, I would assume.
Yeah.
And the Pistons are the worst team in the NBA. It's not like he's doing a good job as director of player personnel. Well,
that's right. That's right. So I don't know. Do they even look at the resume and be like, I don't know, man. Cavs, Pistons didn't work out super hot. So anyway, that's fun. That's funny. And Michigan sucks. So, you know, that's always fun to kind of to watch and pay attention to. Let's go ahead and get into Ask Us Anything. But before we do that, we want to remind you that the Dubcast is sponsored by the Dry Goods Store at 11warriors.com. Shirts, hats, stickers, all kinds of great stuff. Check it out. All right, let's do Ask Us Anything. And we want to remind you that you can ask us literally anything by sending us questions to dubcast@11warriors.com. And I do want to emphasize that you can ask us anything, because
within reason,
you've definitely been asking us. Yes, you have been asking us literally anything, and it is very funny. So please continue doing that. I enjoy that quite a bit. This is from Kevin, who says, "Good morning, guys."
Good evening, Kevin.
Yeah, that's right. 10:31 at night. Do you think if women could play football, Ohio State would win a natty? I do, go girl. I mean, it's about institutional inertia, right? So yeah, I think Ohio, they've got the resources, they got facilities. If it was there, you know, if there was women's football, I think Ohio State would dominate it in the same way they do.
I won a co-ed title when I was a sophomore at Ohio State, and our quarterback was a woman, and she was an ace. She was like one of the leaders of – I'm blanking on her name because it was like over 10 years ago, but she was like she was a block O, like one of the presidents or whatever for like her senior year. So like she was very, very much in it, and she was one of, if not the best player on our team as the quarterback. So I totally believe that the football talent runs deep for men and for women.
You know what's always funny to me is that, like, unathletic dudes assume that they are automatically way more athletic than every other woman. And, like, I've been lucky enough to have been friends with some, like, really elite athletes, and including, like women athletes. And I've been party to, you know, like pick up basketball games or things like that, where guys who haven't dribbled a basketball or kicked a soccer ball in several years, like going against people who, like, that's their life. And it is always so funny to me to watch them just get completely turned around, because it's like, no, it's a skill. It doesn't matter who's developing it. If someone has it and you don't, you're going to lose.
Yeah.
And there's really no getting around that. So it's just really funny to see that happen.
Yeah, it's different also, when you, like, Kevin, hypothesize like a men's high school basketball team against like a women's college team or something, because they're both regularly competing.
Elite athletes playing
elite when Joe Schmo,
elite athletes is different.
Right, when Joe Schmo at Lifetime Fitness says that he can like beat a WNBA player one on one, that's like, Chief.
Like, yes, you need take to relax. A lap. Please, that's right. Slow your roll a little bit. It's like, no. I beat Phil and Horse the other day. I can definitely take on Katie Smith. All right. So also Kevin adds, I think Diebler has earned the coaching job. What's the worst that can happen? Lose 17 in a row on the road. That's a good point. Because we keep talking about, like, well, is he going to get the I mean, is he the guy to get Ohio State to the Sweet 16? Maybe we need to temper our expectations a little bit and just, you know, kind of enjoy the fact that we could have a coach that doesn't do that. So I don't know. I mean, that's a good point.
Well, I mean, that's a cute answer, but your long-term concern, I think, is well placed, which is, like, if you do bring back Diebler, what happens if he doesn't end up being the guy that can make
the
most?
Yeah, what if he sucks as a recruiter?
Well, what? Right? Yeah, like, right. If he's not making the most of the assets that are available and bringing in, you know, really high level talent year over year in the way that, you know, Holtmann kind of did, at least on the recruiting trail, what then happens like 3 years down the line when Ohio State isn't bringing in guys that can develop to the level that they can compete at the top of the Big Ten, right? And they're still just kind of treading water, maybe not to the tune of losing 17 in a row, but we're again, or on the road, but we're again in a place as Ohio State fans where we're left frustrated and thinking, what could this program actually be if someone like a Sean Miller was at the helm? So for that answer you gave when I asked you that question earlier, I like totally echo your sentiments on that. I will say, if they do decide to go with Diebler, I'm not going to be like totally devastated, but I am going to be thinking in the back of my head, like, how is this guy going to do with recruiting when I can't imagine even going into this season, he probably thought he was going to have to assume those type of responsibilities at this stage of his career.
Right, exactly. All right, last one here. This is from our good friend Alvin, who wants to know, quite simply, which Buckeye or Buckeyes should be on the NCAA game cover?
Oh, that's a good question.
I think it's somebody that has been established, right? And actually, I would emphasize guys who are coming back, who a lot of people expected to leave for the NFL. So a guy like Sawyer or JT or Henderson, probably Henderson. I would say probably Trayvon Henderson is probably the best candidate for that, I would say.
Yeah. I don't know. Put Kyle McCord on there. in the Cuse uniform. That's a tough one. I don't think realistically you can expect a Buckeye to be on there, to truth be told.
Well, but if you were picking one, right? If you just had one guy to choose, I think to represent, I think Henderson's probably the guy, but you know.
Yeah, I think
JT would be a good choice.
I think you gotta go with Henderson. If not Henderson, then yeah, either, you know, Sawyer or Tui Moloau. It's unfortunately, it's a bit of a down year. And the thing that I'm really dreading is that, especially because I think a Michigan guy was on the last cover ever, right? Was it Denard was on 14?
It was Denard, yeah.
Right.
The
thing that I'm dreading is that, like, they're going to put – and have they said that they're going to put, like, someone actively still in college on the covers going forward? Or are they going to be doing what they did before, which was – one of the outgoing people that succeeded in the last year is going to be on the cover.
That's a good question.
Because I'm dreading that they're going to put McCarthy on there or something as like an allusion to the fact that a Michigan guy was on the last cover.
Oh, they might. That would be a very video gamey EA Sports kind of thing to do. I wouldn't be surprised by that at all if actually that's how that played out.
Yeah.
Which would suck, but yeah, I don't have a lot of confidence on the game not sucking, so I'm not super worried about it. look, I'm just, as I emphasize every time this topic comes up, you can rent games from your local library. I just want people to be aware of that.
Try before you buy.
Okay, that's all I'm saying. So that's Ask Us Anything. Thank you for sending us those questions. We will continue to answer them. We've got a little bit of a potpourri here as we move on to the latter part of the Dubcast. First of all, Ohio State self-reported 4 NCAA recruiting violations, as that's the tone of voice that Michigan fan sites use to talk about it. But in reality, most of these were pretty minor. I also question whether or not the NCAA, in light of recent court rulings, even has the ability to enforce NIL rules and regulations. So even if Ohio State might have engaged in any of these, I'm not even sure the NCAA is legally allowed to. So, you know, social media violation, somebody took a picture with somebody, booster contact, whatever. Another photo edit that nobody was supposed to have, impermissible contact. But again, you know, the key difference here between Ohio State doing this is that this is self-reported versus Michigan doing it and then lying about it and saying it never happened. So that's the key difference, is lying to the governing body of the sport and self-reporting it. That's kind of what, you know, landed Michigan and Jim Harbaugh in hot water.
The amusing part of this story to me was I learned that in terms of the photo edit, you're allowed to supply those to the family if the recruit is a junior or a senior in high school. But because Chris Henry Jr. was technically a sophomore, that was why they got in trouble for it. I also didn't realize that Adam Pac-Man Jones was the guardian in question that they supplied the photo to. I did not realize
that also
he was the guardian of Chris Henry Jr. So that was kind of shocking to read, but it just goes to show you what happens when you involve yourself with Adam Pac-Man Jones. You just land yourself in hot water.
Yeah. But no, it's, I don't know. It's just a crazy thing. I mean, it's sad about what happened with Chris Henry, and then, you know, I don't know. To me, the whole thing is just ridiculous because the NCAA has no real enforcement power anyway. But I do appreciate Ohio State dutifully, you know, still self-reporting these things that they know they're not going to actually get.
Yeah, I mean, and I think we talked about it too, but like way earlier, like in my maybe infancy of Dubcast appearances. But they're so forthright about this after what happened with Tattoogate that it like. You're almost kind of grateful for it as an Ohio State fan, but it is
right. It
is pretty funny that they're still like being this forthright about it, even in this moment where we're seeing the authority of the NCAA crumble around it. So
yeah, there's like no reason to do that whatsoever, which is hilarious.
But they just never want anything like what happened with, you know, Pryor and whatever to happen again. So they're willing to be this forthcoming about it.
Right. Speaking of the NCAA, they are going to vote on some rule changes in April that includes helmet communication technology. That kind of
I wonder what could have spurned that.
Yes. What might have been the impetus for this recent discussion that they are having about this incredibly obvious thing? I just want to emphasize and to reiterate that something I've been saying since the very beginning of all the stuff with Connor Stallions or whatever. I don't care if that's, you know, what Michigan did or what that, I don't think that's like the worst thing in the world, sign stealing. I think it's very funny and how it played out. I mean, how could it not be hilarious that Connor Stallions is DB Coopering himself in the Central Michigan games, right? Like that's hilarious, but I'm not like outraged or offended morally or anything like that. And I also think an element of that, part of the reason why I say that is because, of course, they should have had helmet communication technology before this. It's insane and archaic that they didn't. So that's cool. Not cool is the idea that they want to try to possibly bring the 2-minute warning to college football that serves zero purpose whatsoever.
Add time.
Beyond adding an additional commercial break. It is nakedly about money, and obviously all of this is, I'm not naive, obviously I know why things are done in major college sports or major sports in general. It's not like they're out here, you know, like donating their time to the fan. They want to get paid for the product they're putting on the field, but man, that sucks. It is the dumbest thing in the NFL and is the dumbest thing in college football if it comes to you know, the lower ranks. So I hate that idea, and it's just, it'll only serve to make the game slower, to make, you know, additional ads, just to generally irritate everyone.
Well, we're losing the things that distinguish college football from the NFL more and more.
Yes.
And that's really what the grand tragedy of all this.
Frankly,
is.
I would be okay if the NFL got rid of it too. But it's, yes, I agree with you. It is definitely, it's the homogenization of the sport, and I don't enjoy it. It's stupid. Yeah, that's I'm frustrated.
Well, the other thing too is that, and I don't think they have this in the NFL, where you have the stoppage of the clock for every first down in the last 2 minutes like you do in college. That's kind of why I was okay with the 2-minute warning existing for the NFL, is that it's like, okay, it's an unofficial timeout for both teams as you're preparing to go down the stretch here, and you're, you know, you're really forcing clock management to become an issue or something you have to pay attention to in the waning moments of this game, whereas they have another contingency for that already in college where it's stopping. Maybe did they reduce it to a minute? I don't know if it's still 2 minutes or not. I think it is 2 minutes, but I mean, in any event, there's a greater like leeway or extension of that kind of stoppage of play in the clutch moments for the college games that reflects the fact that these players are amateurs, where you're giving them a stoppage of play every first down. Adding a 2 minute warning onto that is just unnecessary when you already have that rule in place. So it's unfortunate that in this era where we're just gradually seeing the lines blurred between professional and amateur ranks, that this is just another step towards that. I don't like it one bit. Ads are no ads. It's just not necessary.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. Also, another change that has been proposed is something that people have been discussing since the end of the past football season, which is the additional expansion to 14 teams of the college football playoff. And the funny thing about that is that the two big sticks in the college football conference game, of course, the SEC and the Big Ten, they want automatic buys, right? They want to be able to get some auto bids and then have buys and all that great stuff. And unsurprisingly, the Big 12 and the SEC are not happy about that. I understand why the SEC and the Big Ten would push for that. I also think it is incredibly stupid. And, you know, you want to be guaranteed a spot and get, national prominence and keep your position and blah, blah, blah. And I almost feel like this is almost just a bargaining chip that they're going for whatever reason. But, it's dumb. And they're going to be guaranteed, honestly, the way the conferences are situated and stacked, they're going to be guaranteed first round buys at some point anyway, just because of the nature of the teams that are going to be getting in. So I think this is a solution in search of a problem and is really only going to frustrate efforts to kind of codify what this new playoff system looks like, because the Big 12 and the ACC, I'm sure, just straight hate the guts of everybody in the SEC and the Big Ten right now.
Well, it also kind of defeats the purpose of the expansion to begin with, which was to be more inclusive of the entire blueprint of, or not blueprint, but the teams that make up the successful component of the college season that may not be necessarily getting recognized or a opportunity to compete in the postseason. And this is just like some insurance leverage for the teams that are already positioned well enough to be in the playoff nearly every year to continue to stay in that foothold, which is, I mean, if you're a team as spoiled as like Ohio State has been with that success, or, some of the other top level SEC teams, you're not really as a fan cognizant of that issue. But from the outside looking in, it's an incredibly frustrating, particularly if you're like, a fan of a team like TCU. And I think even the coach of TCU was one of the ones that was immediately the most critical of this. I think invoking it to the level of like, this is the equivalent of giving like the Dallas Cowboys a first round bye in the NFL playoffs every year, just because they have the most fans, which is totally accurate. It's just appeasing the top level of the sport in a way that not only is largely unnecessary, but is insulting to the reason that they should be exploring playoff expansion in the first place. So I hope that this doesn't happen. It's not really an issue that is going to affect Ohio State, so it's hard for me to say that I'll be deeply upset regardless of what the outcome is, but it's just not good for the common college football fan if this falls into effect, which doesn't make a difference to the decision makers in this scenario, because people are going to tune in and watch anyway, and they're going to make their money. But for them to try to, maximize the potential return for their own interests, at the expense of what would be at the best for the sport. It's just more unfortunate sights to see, as again, we just talked about with the 2 minute warning thing, the blurring of the lines between the college and the NFL. It's just, there's too much stakeholding going on right now relative to the decisions being made about the future infrastructure and makeup of the sport at the expense of what college football fans actually want to see. I don't like the way that it's heading, but you know, we just kind of have to deal with it.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I think it's a little bit frustrating to see how that works out. And then, you know, like when people get cynical about the amount of money in college football and NIL and things like that, or they're, you know, they say, well, this isn't the sport that I knew. Sometimes my initial reaction is like, okay, well, the money's always been there, right? And when they started giving up billion-dollar contracts to conferences, you know, to broadcast their games, that kind of flew out the window, right? This whole pretense of amateurism. But on the other hand, there are some very concrete things that can still be done to retain some of those things that you really liked about the sport. And it is frustrating to see those things actively taken away. And I can kind of relate to somebody who's like, you know what? I understand logically that it's not that much different in terms of, like, you know, players getting paid and all that kind of stuff. It doesn't really change the product. But I can also understand why somebody would be like, it still feels like it does. So I get that. And there's going to be a lot more change coming to college football. I just hope that the people who are making these decisions are aware of, you know, what keeps the sport unique and what gets people interested in wanting to come back and pay attention. Last thing I want to say on the Dubcast here before we get out of here, we got to obviously shout out Ohio State alum and friend of the Dubcast. I have to mention this, Richard Lewis, RIP 76. Really funny dude. People loved him, of course, in Robin Hood, Men in Tights, and Curb Your Enthusiasm. Richard Lewis was a guy who I think had a ton of love for his university. And I think for a long time didn't really feel like he could express that for, I think, various reasons. You know, there were incidents, you know, starting in the 80s and things like that. But we were really, really, really proud and fortunate and lucky to have him on the Dubcast to do an interview with us where we had him on. We brought him on. He called in, started talking, and we couldn't get a word in edgewise for 50 minutes. And it was hilarious because, first of all, he's a very funny guy. He was telling all these incredible stories. He was super gracious and just the nicest dude ever. But also because, you know, our my co-host at the time, Bo Bishop, he's also blessed with the gift of gab himself. And he could not, the great Richard Lewis would not let him interject or ask a question at all. And it was, I mean, eventually I think we got to like an interview, but it was just a really fun hour of my life that I got to be in that dude's presence, at least, you know, via the, you know, the Dubcast. And he will be missed. He was a great comedic mind. He was a really, really funny guy. And like I said, incredibly gracious with his time with us. So I will appreciate everything that he did and, you know, the best to his family. And I hope, you know, they remember all the good things about him because he was truly great.
And I would encourage our listeners to go back and listen to that episode of the Dubcast because it'll not only make you wish that, you know, Bo Bishop was still, or you were still listening to Bo Bishop as opposed to my own voice, but
it
is interesting as I was listening to that. And it really did seem like that Richard Lewis needed that opportunity to vent about his feelings relative to the relationship that he had with the university, because I think that he was sincerely, I don't know how many opportunities between what happened with the opportunity to sue the university for slander that he graciously passed over and his Dubcast appearance, I don't know how many opportunities he really had to explore publicly the Ohio State part of his life that he clearly held so dear and looked back upon so fondly before Mr. Bo Bishop and Mr. Johnny Ginter reached out to him and begged and pleaded for him to come on the Dubcast. And I think that I think that was a very significant bridge building opportunity for him that, you know, kind of helped shepherd him to be able to more openly talk about the Ohio State component of his life for the last 7 years of it. So that podcast appearance, I think, actually holds some very significant, I think it was a more significant moment in, if not the life of Richard Lewis, than just the overall saga of Ohio State relative to Richard Lewis, than perhaps it maybe is looked back upon. The last thing that I want to say that was a big thing that I think should not be ignored from that podcast appearance is that Lewis said that he would appreciate having his ashes scattered across the Michigan field as a way to hex the Wolverines. So if if his family has not made any decisions about how they would like to memorialize their dearly departed Richard Lewis at this stage, let's not rule anything out relative to what he actually said he wanted to do on the Dubcast so many years ago.
You can listen to that interview. We, on the story that we have on the website about his death, we have that on there, the interview. So you can go ahead and listen to that. Like I said, RIP to a really funny guy, an excellent dude, and you know, a great Ohio State fan. So, you know, big week, lots of things happening. We'll be back next week to talk about all of the stuff going on with Ohio State sports and everything related to that. But until then, I'm Johnny.
I'm George.
And we'll see you then.
Take care, folks.